Hey there, ever thought about what makes your heart beat a little faster?
Oh, you mean like when you discover a new track that just speaks to you?
Yeah, or finding a movie that you can't stop thinking about?
Well, get ready to feel that excitement all over again because Amazon Prime is here to take your entertainment and shopping experience to the next level.
Absolutely. Prime isn't just about getting your packages quicker. It's about diving into a world of endless possibilities. From the latest releases to exclusive content you won't find anywhere else.
And don't even get me started on the music. Prime offers concert specials that will transport you right to the front room. It's like being at the hottest gigs without leaving your living room.
I use Prime to tap in with some of my favorite artists' live shows from any and every genre of music.
Trust me, Prime is a game changer. It's like having a personalized superstore and entertainment hub right at your fingertips.
So why wait? Head over to Amazon.com/Prime and start experiencing entertainment like never before.
Tonight on Revolt Black News Weekly.
My name is Maxwell Alejandro Frost, and I'm going to be the first Generation Z member of the United States Congress.
The groundbreaking midterm elections and how Black America is bracing for change. From the first Gen Z congressman ready to shake up the system to the Raphael Warnock and Herschel Walker runoff election. So where do we go from here?
The young people do have a place in this arena.
Then, Black America and the failing grade for our educational system. While learning levels are at their lowest, we're breaking down who's to blame.
And I'm Kennedy Rue. Black Panther Wakanda Forever takes top billing at the box office. How the cast is reacting.
One step at a time.
All of this tonight as the Black News Revolution starts right now.
Black Panther Wakanda Forever dominates the box office, and we've got the cast reaction. Hey, everyone, I'm Kennedy Rue McCullough. Welcome to the show.
And I'm guest host Rochelle Ritchie. We'll get to that in a bit with Kennedy, but first, we break down the midterm history makers, including Maxwell Frost, the first Gen Z elected to Congress. Meanwhile, it's a battle to the finish line as Georgia's critical neck-and-neck senatorial race between Raphael Warnock and Herschel Walker heads to a runoff election. So how is Black America's Gen Z population a factor? That's tonight's top story.
My name is Maxwell Alejandro Frost, and I'm going to be the first Generation Z member of the United States Congress.
We won. That's how Congressman-elect Maxwell Frost began his Instagram post after his victory.
Congressman-elect Frost's behaviors as a Gen Z person exhibited through his activity on social media, which is really exciting. And it's kind of like an experiment that we're all watching and waiting to see how this plays out in terms of what Gen Z leadership looks like on the national level. So I'm very excited for him. I'm very excited for the doors that it's going to open up for, hopefully individuals like myself and other young, people of color that want to get involved in government and in politics.
Like Frost, New York City Council member Chi Osei became the change he wanted to see by running for office himself.
When I saw that my local elected official, my city council member, wasn't sharing the values that I wanted to see within my representation of leadership, I took it upon myself to take a leap of faith and run for office myself to be the council member that I wanted to have.
This same energy was found on Election Day at the polls with Gen Z voters who overwhelmingly voted in favor of progressive candidates, a trend many experts are saying could be here to stay.
Around 70% of Gen Z voters in this past election voted for Democrats. And a lot of our generation is voting for progressive elected officials to get into the places that they are getting into. In 2024, 45% of the electorate will be Gen Z and millennials. So I'm hoping to see that as time progresses, our generation will continue to vote in and continue to advocate and fight for progressive values like abortion rights for all people, like climate justice, like increasing the minimum wage.
Concerns on how Gen Z will vote in the future is already a discussion point for the right. But for Gen Z, many say their votes are less about party affiliation and more about where the candidates stand on key issues that are important to them.
I didn't sign up for nobody else did. I know y'all didn't either. Then I happened to read this article. I read this article and they asked the kids what they were doing with the money. They said they were out there buying video games. They were going on vacation. They was gambling. They were drinking booze.
And I've never been the biggest cheerleader for establishment Democrats or President Joe Biden in any way, shape, or form. But, his student loan relief initiative is so important and something that's going to benefit our generation. This runoff election is so important because over this past, these past couple of years, there have been two United States senators, and they were really holding up a lot of the work that the Biden administration really wanted to get done. Re-electing Senator Warnock again would hinder both of those senators obsolete and would make their power in terms of holding up Biden's administration and preventing us as a generation from achieving, again, our multitude of progressive values that we want to see, of protecting our rights, of codifying Roe and making sure that abortion is here to stay within the United States.
Joining us in studio is rapper and motivational speaker Yellow Pain, and virtually is the founder of Next Gen Come Up, Anya Dillard. Obviously, you both saw the historic win of Maxwell Frost. He's the first Gen Z member elected to Congress. What impact, Yellow, do you think that his election is going to have on the country, and in particular, the impact that it might have on younger people actually participating in the voting process?
I think it's going to start a ripple effect. And one thing that he was saying was that Gen Z and millennials, we make up one third of the U.S. population, but we don't even make up one third of the government. So it gives us a voice, and it gives us somebody that knows how to speak our language. Because to be honest, one of the biggest reasons why we can't get a big youth turnout is because nobody knows how to speak to the youth. So now we got one of the youth in the office, and that's amazing.
You know, Anya, one of the areas where young people were targeted by a lot of these politicians, including Maxwell, I'm sure, was on TikTok. What impact do you think social media has had on young people actually participating in the electoral process?
I think social media has been huge. I mean, we saw the boom of TikTok during the pandemic, and it became this huge network where young people could not only, occupy themselves, but honestly, a lot of change makers and people in the socio-political space that were our age started to use it as a really effective tool to mobilize young people. And I think that when it came to the midterm elections, we saw this, at its upteenth potential. And I think that people like Maxwell were able to utilize that to really not only connect with other Gen Zers, but to prove that young people do have a place in this arena and have every right to have their voices heard.
Some of the issues that he talks about, getting rid of the death penalty, legalizing recreational marijuana, decriminalizing sex work, some of those things could pose a challenge for him once he is in Congress. Do you think that could be the case, Yellow?
Definitely, because a lot of career politicians, a lot of them is haters, They don't really want to see, young people in power like that. So if anything, I would just tell the man, stay grounded, Make sure that you really know what you're talking about, because we need you, We need you.
I think it's the gambit, I think that as a young person in the socio-political arena, you are constantly under fire for people wondering how you're even qualified enough to be in the positions that you occupy, not to mention him being a man of color. And I think that all of those things not only prove how much change is actually needed in those spaces, but it also proves his strength and his resilience. And I also just think it's brilliant to be able to support someone like him in a position that he's in. He is going to end up inspiring and empowering a whole nother generation of young people to do exactly what he's doing now.
Do you think that candidates need to focus more so on the issues than the party when it comes to young voters? Because I was reading an article and they were saying that, look, young people are voting on issues, not for people. What's your thoughts, Yellow?
Absolutely. At the end of the day, the people in office, they represent the people who vote for them. You know what I mean? So we can't focus so much on red or blue. We have to focus on our community. What is going to better our community, our quality of life, our living experience? Who is going to do something for us in those regards? I don't care what color they represent. It's not a gang. You know what I mean? This is our livelihood.
Mm-hmm.
And Anya, you know, do you think that it's important for Gen Z to be politically engaged and invested? You know, explain that to me. What are your thoughts?
Absolutely. I think that one of the things I talk about all the time is the fact that the words Democrat and Republican just continue to exponentially lose their meaning over time. It's not really about the party. It's not about the color. It's not even about the sociopolitical denomination, but it's about the policy. And there are no permanent enemies, no permanent friends, only permanent interests.
And Yael, I want to wrap this conversation up with you, but I wanted to get to this because it's pretty exciting. You've done a lot of work in the community and educating young people and young Black people in particular about the importance of civic engagement. And now you have another method. This time it's not a song, but it's a documentary. Tell us very briefly about that before we go.
What the documentary is doing is simplifying government terms all the way down to where people, just like my man's is doing, is simplifying it for people who don't have any interest in politics, who don't know how the system works, and letting us finally understand. You know.
Hey there, ever thought about what makes your heart beat a little faster?
Oh, you mean like when you discover a new track that just speaks to you?
Yeah, or finding a movie that you can't stop thinking about?
Well, get ready to feel that excitement all over again because Amazon Prime is here to take your entertainment and shopping experience to the next level.
Absolutely. Prime isn't just about getting your packages quicker. It's about diving into a world of endless possibilities, from the latest releases to exclusive content you won't find anywhere else.
And don't even get me started on the music. Prime offers concert specials that will transport you right to the front row. It's like being at the hottest gigs without leaving your living room.
I use Prime to tap in with some of my favorite artists' live shows from any and every genre of music.
Trust me, Prime is a game changer. It's like having a personalized superstore and entertainment hub right at your fingertips.
So why wait? Head over to Amazon.com/Prime and start experiencing entertainment like never before.
Bridging the gap between the people who don't believe in the system and the people who know that the system is everything.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Yael and Anya, for joining us. It'll be obviously very interesting to see how Maxwell does. Stay with us. There's more Revolt Black News Weekly right after the break. Welcome back. Tonight, we're shifting our focus to the educational system failing our Black American students. Reading levels in our community schools are tumbling. As we examine how to course correct the system's failing grade, we now ask ourselves, is the COVID pandemic or the school administration at fault?
A national exam administered by the Department of Education confirmed what a lot of us already knew. Remote learning widened racial disparities and erased decades of academic progress, especially in math.
Math scores for eighth graders fell in nearly every state. Just 26% of eighth graders were proficient in math, down from 34% in 2019. In Detroit, a city that is majority Black, nearly one in two school children live in poverty. Just 6% of fourth graders were proficient in math in 2019. This year, that number fell to 3%.
We knew that Black people were struggling in America's public schools, but we didn't know how much until we opened those systems up to greater scrutiny. And what we found was that our children are being undereducated. It isn't a new thing. The Miseducation of the Negro was written in the early 20th century. And what we found is from then to now, Black people have been trying to find ways out of the system that was designed to undermine their very growth and humanity.
But old issues in education continue to present themselves still today, as seen in this now viral video.
Deep down in my heart, I'm ethnocentric, which means I think my race is the superior one.
These shocking statements were made by a Texas middle school teacher who has now been fired. Rapper Southside, whose son was in the video questioning the teacher, joins him in asking, is public school a safe place for Black and brown children to learn?
The research is really clear that children who are African American perform best when they're learning in academic settings led by African American teachers. So one of the things that we have to do is we have to push harder to put African Americans in positions where they can be teachers. There are quite a number of people who've never had a Black teacher. I'm one of the states that we have schools in is Connecticut. Only 4% of all the teachers in the entire state are Black.
And those types of numbers are pushing some parents of Black American children to continue to explore other options, including homeschooling. 3.3% of Black families were homeschooling their children in spring of 2020 at the beginning of the pandemic. But the figure jumped to 16.1% in the fall of 2020.
And so there has been a movement, or there is a movement afoot, of Black families who said, I could do bad all by myself, or in fact, I could do better by myself. So I know that, interestingly enough, children who are homeschooled, and I say this as somebody who runs charter schools in multiple states, children who are homeschooled of all races tend to outperform their these children from the same communities significantly.
Here to break down the educational epidemic is Whitley Yates, Director of Diversity for the Indiana GOP, Wesley Dixon, Special Assistant to the President and Board Secretary of Vassar College, and community activist and business owner Giovanni Patterson. Whitley, I want to start with you. Many Black families feel that the school system is failing our community now more than ever. What do you think is the leading cause of distrust in the education system?
I think for a really long time, we've seen the data and statistics that show that Black students are trailing behind all other ethnicities. And instead of creating or devising plans to strategically strengthen and develop those students, they've kind of been lost in the overall flow of education. And so what you've been seeing lately is a transition for more Black students being homeschooled, as well as utilizing school choice and going through the voucher program. But the truth is, after COVID, it exacerbated and exposed not only the disparities, but the inequities within the educational system. And it's really, honestly, if we're going to be honest, it's a national security crisis that we're having.
Yeah, Wesley, when you look at the numbers, you know, when you think of 84% of Black students lack proficiency in math, and then 85% lack proficiency in reading, is there some truth to what Whitley is saying?
Absolutely. Whitley is absolutely correct. These numbers are startling, and our students and our babies, I would like to call them, really deserve much better. Education is a civil right. I think many people would agree with that. And I think the fact that Black students in particular struggle to take advantage of that civil right is really reprehensible and abhorrent. And I think we need to all think as a community how we can work urgently, but over time in a long-term way to rectify that problem.
Giovanni, I want to bring you into the conversation. About a year ago, it was made public that a majority of Baltimore City high schoolers tested at elementary levels in math and reading. And now this lack of proficiency is spreading across the nation. I lived in Baltimore for 5 years when I was a reporter there. You're there now. What type of education policies need to be rolled out to affect some real change, especially in cities like Baltimore?
Well, I think it was alluded to earlier, things like school choice and vouchers really have benefited, you know, particularly Black students. Now, what's happening in Baltimore is really abysmal because what we, you know, if you even look at the national report card that was recently released, it performed like at the bottom. And Baltimore is a city that's majority Black. We have majority Black leadership. And it's like our students and our kids are trapped in this system that doesn't want to educate and lead them to a brighter future. To me, that's sad. But I think the great policies, you know, when it comes to educating students from all walks of life, is let those parents have a choice on where they send their kids.
When you hear about school choice and vouchers, a lot of times that is a conservative talking point, but people don't seem to realize that a lot of Black people and Black families actually support that. Is that something that cities like Baltimore, that are predominantly ran by Black people, need to really look at instilling across their cities?
Absolutely. And outside of a conservative talking point, it's a winning talking point because, for instance, during COVID, those private schools didn't have to close down. So my daughter's school never closed down. And so there was no gap in her education. But the truth is that that's not what is really going to create a Herculean effort to change this, because the truth is most inner city and African-American students are educated in the public school system. So it's going to take a robust funding of the public school system, reallocation of those tax dollars to fix the deficits that occur. It's going to be looking at how we can have school year round to make up for the years that these students spent on distance education, not really learning, and some of them being unsupervised, sitting in the parking lot of a McDonald's trying to get on Wi-Fi. There are some really big issues here. And if we don't tackle it, what we're going to see is later on down the line, when we're looking for leaders and those to create policies that impact our country, we won't have them because they won't be able to read or do math.
My wife and I actually have a lawsuit against the Baltimore City Public Schools. Even Ben Crump has joined in our lawsuit. Our school system in Baltimore City, again, is funded. It's one of the fifth highest in the country of the largest school districts. But our schools are performing the worst. So we have a lawsuit to actually investigate where the tax dollars are being spent and where that money goes. Because if I received $16,000 or $18,000 a year to educate my child, I think I could make a better decision on how my child is educated versus putting it into this money pit that has become our Baltimore, our school system, and hoping it works for everybody.
I think that being an active parent, and you've seen a lot of Republicans push parents to definitely get involved, but as a taxpayer in Baltimore, you should be at those school board meetings, so you should know exactly where that money is being allocated. And so I find it actually interesting that you wouldn't know where that money is going and how it's being held up. Many of these schools receive COVID dollars for these specific things. And so if you're not finding out what that is, if there's no level of transparency within Baltimore, then I do think that that's important. But that is not a panacea for what's happening around this country.
Wesley, what do you say to those who say they no longer believe in the education system? If you look at some of the recent stats, college applications and the idea of going to college is actually down because people think they can make it without that form of an education. What do you say to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are different things and different life paths for different people. To be clear, college is not for everybody. Certain kinds of college is not for everyone. So I don't want people to delude themselves into thinking that they have to sort of aspire to go to a Barnard where you worked or a Vassar where I worked. That is not the goal for everybody. But I do hope that people have a general value of education in a variety of forms. It doesn't have to be formal. It doesn't have to be elite. But I think if people value learning, value education, they will go very far in life. And there are many ways to learn. You can learn in community colleges that offer vocational and technical programs, as well as traditional sort of liberal arts programs as well too. So I think providing students and families with good education about the range of choices they can avail themselves of relative to education, again, formal or not, is a good investment, not only in that family, but as Whitney said, in our future as a country.
Yeah, I think we can certainly all agree that money is not the solvent of these issues. There definitely has to be a lot more done at home and in our school system. So Whitley, Wesley, and Giovanni, I want to thank you for joining us. All right, let's move on to the headlines beyond our borders as we go black all over the world.
First stop, Haiti. The country continues to face inflation, gang violence, cholera, and more. Now, after many months of an economic crippling fuel shortage to protest against President Ariel Henry, Haitians are finally able to fill up their tanks due to the G9 gang releasing their stronghold. Chaos continues throughout the island. The American embassy was reportedly attacked by gunfire. While no one was severely injured, this continues to underscore the opposition to colonization and the response to the U.S. aid and gangs. Finally, we head to Italy, where two rescue ships containing over 600 migrants arrived, leaving 234 migrants from Libya stuck on a boat off the dock of Sicily. This comes on the heels of Italy's new prime minister, Giorgia Meloni, who has told to Al Jazeera decided to ban male migrants in order to stop the influx of immigrants.
That they are pushed back into international waters, maybe even pushed back to Libya. So all the memories come up on their journey, what they experienced, saw people dying, saw people going missing in front of them. They don't want to go back to these places.
Women and children and those with illnesses were able to leave the ship. Things turned into a standoff as rescue boats refused to leave, prompting humanitarian programs fighting for the rights of those left on board. Still, four boats remain in limbo, and Italy finally allowed a ship to dock, but still leaving the rest of the migrants on board.
We'll continue to track those global headlines. Stay with us. Kennedy has the entertainment remix when Revolt Black News Weekly returns.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Kennedy Rue. We're kicking things off with Black Panther: Wakanda Forever in the record-breaking $300 million box office domination, topping off the latest in the entertainment remix.
One step at a time. One day at a time, honestly, truly. I think, especially when it's been, or this has become, this journey, this career is proving to be like something that I've dreamt about and prayed about and thought about like incessantly for so long.
Newcomer Dominique Thorne is about to become an even bigger star after Wakanda Forever delivered a mind-blowing box office weekend. Superhero role was introduced in the sequel. Now the 25-year-old New Yorker will star in her very own Marvel series.
What is next? Up next is Ironheart in 2023, coming to Disney+. I think it'll be a ride of a lifetime. And I hope that people, seems like folks have already enjoyed and are sort of responding positively to what they've seen in Black Panther. So hopefully that's encouragement enough to come over to Disney Plus.
Beyonce's Renaissance leads the Grammy nominations with 9.
As I get a little older.
Kendrick Lamar, Mary J. Blige, DJ Khaled, Future, and The Dream round out the list of top nominees. B, Mary J., Lizzo, and Kendrick Lamar face off for Album of the Year. That same group, including Doja Cat, is also up for Record of the Year.
God did is expected.
God did. Revolt did. Yep. Puff did. Yep. Oh, you think it's a game, huh? God did out right now. The love is felt. I know you got questions, but I gotta do my intro. They ain't believing us.
Khaled called it, joining Future, Jack Harlow, Kendrick Lamar, and Pusher T up for Best Rap Album. And then there's the first-timers, Money Long joining Lotto and Glorilla. Lotto tweeting, I'm crying so bad right now. And Glorilla's tweet kept it simple, but God. The Grammys will air February 5th on CBS.
Drop it 3 times for him. I don't see you dancing.
Diddy wowed the crowd at the 2022 Baby to Baby Gala that included Kerry Washington and Kelly Rowland. Tyler Perry saluted Kim Kardashian, who was honored for her commitment to children in need.
I want the world to know how incredible you are doing that, using your voice for social injustice, to help people be free, talking to presidents, doing whatever you have to. When you have that kind of celebrity and that kind of status and that kind of following and you use it to help, lift, and encourage, that's a blessing.
Everywhere we go, the spirits seem to be one step ahead of us, just out of reach.
Who are we gonna call? Well, obviously the Ghost Brothers, who are still scaring audiences every Friday on Discovery Plus. The spirit hunters chase paranormal activity all across the country, but there's one rumored haunted mansion they'd still love to creep into.
We really tried to do the White House.
We've heard stories.
I just think it's up to us to investigate it. Like,
but we got turned down politely a few times. From the people that made the White House, that built it, to all the wild stories that happened, all the energies that have been over there for the past couple hundred years. It's crazy.
There's staff that have had like paranormal experiences. Like sometimes they'll hear footsteps, or like they just say like the house is kind of like got a spirit of its own.
I mean, it's super important to just continue to keep pushing this. You know what I mean? That like I said, this is what Atlanta's about. Young Black entrepreneurs making their way, doing what they gotta do.
Jermaine Dupri among the special guests at the grand opening of Atlanta's Seesaw Lounge. It's the second location for the popular soul food restaurant. Co-owner Juan Farmer hopes their Seesaw initiative inspires more young Black entrepreneurs.
You don't really have to sell drugs. There's different things that you can do besides, you know, balling, you know, being a rapper. You can be a restauranteur.
And when these brothers and sisters were starting this amazing genre of music, no one wanted it. And it was even criminalized. But they pushed ahead.
The brains behind hip-hop were honored by New York City Mayor Eric Adams as the genre celebrates its 50th anniversary. The city is planning multiple events next year to salute the hip-hop movement.
Made 500,000 every time you see me out.
And grab a seat at Roddy Rich's table. He's serving new music this Friday with his latest album, Feed the Streets 3.
That's why you're so mad.
All right, let's mix things up a bit and focus on the cases that caught our attention this week as we explore who's in the system.
They came into the cell. He's on suicide watch.
Social media outrage after this security video from a Georgia jail went viral.
This is a gang-related attack, obviously.
The footage posted to Twitter shows 41-year-old detainee Jared Hobbs being pushed against a wall by guards and repeatedly punched in the head and neck after 5 deputies come into his cell. The Camden County Sheriff's Department has ordered an internal investigation. Civil rights activists are calling for criminal charges against the deputies who swarmed Hobbs. He was booked for traffic violations and drug possession charges.
Heartbreaking. What a tragedy here at UVA. And first of all, our hearts go out to the UVA and the Charlottesville and the Albemarle County communities.
Now an update on the shooting at the University of Virginia campus. Alleged gunman Christopher Darnell Jones Jr. appeared in court on Wednesday to face charges, including second-degree murder and 3 counts of using a handgun.
What happened? Why did it have to get this far? He could have called me.
Jones opened fire on a bus carrying students returning from a school trip. Bullets hit and killed UVA linebacker Deshaun Perry, UVA wide receivers Lavelle Davis Jr. and Devin Chandler.
These are the teachings of Grandmaster Jay, the teacher himself, with or without a militia. I was already spitting this knowledge, and I've been spitting it since 2017.
Next, we head to a Louisville courthouse where Grandmaster Jay, the leader of the black militia known as the Not Effing Around Coalition, has been sentenced to 7 years and 2 months.
It ain't never been great for black people in this country. Stop telling us that damn lie, and don't act like it happened so long ago.
This sentence is in reference to an incident that happened 2 years ago during the Breonna Taylor protest. The black militia leader was charged with assaulting an officer and pointing an AR-15 weapon towards Secret Service. And there are new developments in Memphis and the murder of young Dolph. A third man, Hernandez Govan, has been arrested and charged with first-degree murder and a number of other charges, including conspiracy to commit murder, all connected to the rapper's death. Lastly, we check in with Buffalo.
Buffalo has definitely stood up to their, you know, City of Good Neighbors title. People have continuously reached out to us. They're still stopping by and dropping off packages right here.
Hey, hey, it's Brooke England here from Deposits. And if you're a fan of culture and business, then be sure to check out and subscribe to Deposits, where I interview dope individuals and celebrities of the culture. And we get into contracts, entertainment, and my favorite part, payouts. It's brought to you exclusively by the Revolt Podcast Network, anchored in hip hop, powered by creators.
And calling us and checking on us, seeing if we need anything. It really, really has been an amazing, overwhelming support that we've had.
That is Buffalo mother Zanetta Everhart opening up about life after May 14th. Her 20-year-old son, Zaire Goodman, was among the injured when 18-year-old white supremacist Peyton Gendron opened fire, deliberately targeting East Buffalo's black community and killing 10 residents at a Tops grocery store. As the community heals, there is a long road ahead in the face of a city with a long history of racial divide.
We know for a fact that racism and bigotry and white supremacy and all of those things that they've always been here. I think that the only difference today, they've taken the hoods off.
We'll keep track of those cases. Stay with us. There's more Revolt Black News Weekly when we return.
Welcome back to Revolt Black News Weekly. This week, we focus on Revolt's moguls in the making. It's a very rich and inspiring conversation that catches up with the young minds of tomorrow and those who've helped our HBCU students find the reality of success. Joining me are previous winners, Andre Wilkes and Joshua Weaver. I want to start with you, Joshua. Take us through what you're doing now and how the Moguls in the Making program set you up to win.
So currently now, I work as a product strategist at Allies TM Studio. And fortunately enough for me, being that I was on the winning team and being that I graduated in May, I was able to leverage that and the competition. And instead of getting a guaranteed internship, I was able to convert it into a full-time role.
Yeah, congratulations. Thank you. That's awesome. How did going through that program motivate you to take your mogul in the making status to the next level?
It motivated me in a variety of ways. It motivated me to always want to take that step outside of my comfort zone and trying something new, because you'll never know what's on the other side of that door, what opportunities, what type of growth you'll receive as a person.
Andre, take us through what you're doing now and how the MITM program set you up to win.
Well, I had to go back to school and finish my last year at Howard University. I'm a senior right now. But Mogul set me up to win by forming this direct pipeline. They set a direct and tangible pipeline to an internship. And with that experience and what I was able to do at Ally, and with a big name like Ally, mm-hmm. I think they set me up pretty well for what I'll do next.
So tell me about, while you guys were in the program, what you actually ended up pitching to win the competition.
So we came up with the idea of a community center. Mm-hmm. And at this community center, the citizens of the community can come in and use it. There would be a gym, a playground for the kids, and a botanical garden. Mm-hmm. And all of the equipment that was utilized in the community center, you were able to conduct energy.
We created a product named Funnel that was meant to funnel people of the community straight to a corporation or an employer, mm-hmm. targeting the problem of middle-skilled jobs, because Charlotte, which was our problem area, mm-hmm. had a problem that half of their job market was middle-skilled jobs. So on our platform, you could receive a certification, which would be a trade or a middle-skilled certification, mm-hmm. in-house and for free. And on that same platform, it would directly funnel you to an employer.
How has both of your financial literacy been enhanced having gone through Moguls in the Making and Thurgood Marshall College Fund?
In a personal sense, the competition made me understand what those big numbers, the higher the numbers get, the more mm-hmm. I was able to understand how far they could stretch or how not so mm-hmm. far they could stretch. Mm-hmm. And then I just translated that to personal finance. But then professionally, I learned what makes up an ask, what to look for.
Right.
Definitely. I definitely agree with that. Foundationally, it started with the competition. And for me, the problems that I always had was taking the idea and make it a real thing. Mm-hmm. But also the human-centered design principles that we learned from the competition, it kind of taught me how to better define what the problem is that you're solving for mm-hmm. with the business or whatever it may be. And that was actually very monumental for me, because I felt like a lot of the ideas that I was having didn't really solve anything yet.
Now joining me are marketing and PR officer for Ally Financial, Andrea Brimmer, ambassador for the Thurgood Marshall College Fund, Terrence Jay, and George Spencer, chief development officer of the fund. Andrea, I want to start with you. When you see the springboard that's been set up through Ally, how proud of you are the young men and women who are trying to succeed on this new path?
Oh, I mean, it's everything. It's very emotional. Mm-hmm. I was actually at Art Basel last year, and I had two young men come up to me just on the street and say, we were part of Moguls, and mm-hmm. you don't know us, but we want you to know that Ally changed, and that program changed the trajectory of our lives forever.
Wow.
And it was a very emotional moment for me, and when you realize you're making that kind of impact, it's everything.
Yeah, it makes it all worth it,
I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely. George, tell us what the Thurgood Marshall College Fund is about and how the partnership with Ally came to be.
Sure. So Thurgood Marshall College Fund was founded in 1987 by Dr. N. Joyce Payne. Mm-hmm. It was actually named after the first Black Supreme Court Justice, Thurgood Marshall. Mm-hmm. And it was founded as a scholarship fund. Mm-hmm. But over the years, we learned that it wasn't just important to get students to school. We wanted to help them get through school. Mm-hmm. And so we formed four pillars. Scholarships was still foundational. Mm-hmm. Then programmatic support through things that we do, like innovation entrepreneurship with Ally, capacity building, and then policy and advocacy.
Terrence, how did your ambassadorship come to be?
So let's take it all the way back. I'm in college, a young Terrence J. I'm on academic probation.
Wow.
And I had a teacher that came in my life and told me, look, you're a class clown. I see you goofing off all the time. You got to channel that energy and get with the right people. Mm-hmm. And I met a mentor from the Thurgood Marshall, it was the college fund at the time, mm-hmm. and it completely changed my life. Because of this program, I was able to stay in school. Because I was able to stay in school, I was able to take this energy that I had and start a career in broadcasting that I still have to this day. Mm-hmm. And so to come back now and be an ambassador, it's a dream come true.
Yeah. Talk to me about, you know, where that shift happened and what advice you can give maybe other people struggling.
Absolutely. You know, Jay-Z says that we all have genius level ability within mm-hmm. us, right? Everybody is skilled in something, right? But you have to hone in mm-hmm. and turn what that talent might be into actual skill. It's putting in the hours, it's right. getting that focus. So you have to surround yourself with the right people. And so it's not just a scholarship fund where they give some money so you can stay in school or anything mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. You're getting time with high level executives. You're getting time with other students mm-hmm. from other universities. So you who went to Spelman, mm-hmm. you're able to now meet the top brightest students that went to Howard,
right.
that went the top students that went to FAMU, and you're competing against the students that went to North Carolina A&T. Mm-hmm. So you're raising the bar, you're raising your game, you're also networking. Mm-hmm. It's just this entire infrastructure mm-hmm. of greatness. And yeah. when we talk about Black excellence, that's what it's all about.
Andrea, what does ALLY stand for when it comes to representation and diversity, and how does that mission translate in these programs?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think as a financial services institution, we have our obligation mm-hmm. to make society have better economic mobility. Mm-hmm. And when you talk about that in terms of the ecosystem of really everyone in society, that means that as a bank, we have to represent whether you are Black, whether you are white, mm-hmm. whether you are Asian American, it doesn't matter. Right. We have to make sure that we are putting out products and information and financial mm-hmm. literacy mm-hmm. that make sure that everybody has their best financial possibilities and their mm-hmm. best financial world.
George, what goes through your mind when you see these young men and women become so driven to compete and to ultimately win?
So I think it really kind of boils down to three words. Mm-hmm. Pride, hope, and inspiration. Mm-hmm. I'm super proud of them, right? Yeah. Mainly because of the amplification of the talent. One of the biggest myths at our HBCUs is that talent doesn't exist. Mm. And to see them come and perform the way they do is just phenomenal.
I want to take a moment to thank each and every one of you for coming in. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Before we leave you tonight, we are shining the spotlight on a program that introduces young people to the art of chess.
It's a project called Gift of Chess, which gives Black kids a chance to learn the art of the game. Corey Jacobs, who's behind HBCUs on the Green, is also involved in this game that is changing one life at a time, and he makes our list for Revolutionary of the Week. Let's get right into this. You are mm-hmm. obviously a man of many, many talents, but how did you partner with Gift of Chess?
Oh, well, a young man named Tyrone Davis reached out to me. He graduated from MIT, the first African-American head of the chess club. He knew a friend, you know, of mine that was locked up with me, and, you know, and he knew that I played chess. And he reached out to me on Instagram, and I found out what they was doing with the Gift of Chess and the work they was doing in Africa and all over the world. And we built a friendship, and then ultimately I became an honorary board member to help take the organization even further.
What kind of impact has chess had on you, and how did you actually learn?
Well, I started learning to play chess when I was 11 years old, right? I was in school. I was a very smart kid. But, you know, everybody would say, yeah, this kid wouldn't sit still. He's hyperactive. Until they sent me to a school for challenged kids, which I felt like I was misdiagnosed. And one of the teachers just seen something in me, and I got into a chess club. I got into that chess club, and, you know, I fell in love with the game. I would be playing for hours on end. And teachers was coming around, and it was just unbelievable that Corey Jacobs, you know, was sitting there focused for hours just playing the game. And that's how I started. And then from there, I taught chess for 10 years while I was in prison.
What do you think makes this organization so revolutionary, and even just the concept itself of chess?
Right. I mean, I think what makes it so revolutionary that it crosses all bounds. There's no race, color, gender, socioeconomic status that prohibits people. It creates community, and we're building a global community of chess players, right? So I think one of the strengths is that we're partnering with various organizations. So we got chess boards in Ghana, Kenya, Nairobi. We're going to Compton this week, right, to deliver 110 chess sets to Jefferson Junior High School. And I just feel like I wouldn't be sitting here today if it wasn't for the game. You know, it taught me patience. Yeah. It taught me how to overcome obstacles when my life was feeling like it was hopeless. And it's just a blessing to be able to share that with others.
Now, obviously, this is just one of many things that you are doing, but yes. I wanted to ask you before we go about your op-ed that you wrote on reforming extreme sentencing laws. Tell me about your Buried Alive project and then also your journey to activism.
Well, my journey to activism was, you know, really starting off as a young man going to college and, you know, ended up getting caught and hustling and selling drugs, you know, while I was going to school, which landed me a life sentence in prison where I did 17 years in prison. It was an incredible hard fight to try to fight my way out of there for a nonviolent drug offense. And ultimately, I was able to get clemency from President Obama. When I got out of prison, I vowed to make sure that gift of freedom that I got, I would give to others. So I co-founded an organization called the Buried Alive Project with my attorney and her first client, Sharonda Jones, where we went in and she went to, you know, old alma mater, which was SMU, and we had about 40 law students create the program. And we went to find out where all the bodies are buried in the United States for drug laws for people that are serving life in prison. Right? So once we found out, we seen there was about 4,000 people over the United States that was dying in prison under these laws. So being that I had life in prison, I just wanted to go back in and I wanted to make sure that there's a lot of people that can come out here and do great things like have chess programs, be a positive impact on the community if just given a second chance. So I wanted to be somebody to help change that perspective.
Check and mate for that program.
And you can help support by going to thegiftofchess.org. That does it for us. Remember to stay connected with us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, our YouTube channel, and on our Revolt Black News podcast. We'll see you next time. Peace.
Hey there, ever thought about what makes your heart beat a little faster?
Oh, you mean like when you discover a new track that just speaks to you?
Yeah, or finding a movie that you can't stop thinking about?
Well, get ready to feel that excitement all over again because Amazon Prime is here to take your entertainment and shopping experience to the next level.
Absolutely. Prime isn't just about getting your packages quicker. It's about diving into a world of endless possibilities, from the latest releases to exclusive content you won't find anywhere else.
And don't even get me started on the music. Prime offers concert specials that will transport you right to the front row. It's like being at the hottest gigs without leaving your living room.
I use Prime to tap in with some of my favorite artists' live shows from any and every genre of music.
Trust me, Prime is a game changer. It's like having a personalized superstore and entertainment hub right at your fingertips.
So why wait? Head over to Amazon.com/Prime and start experiencing entertainment like never before.